The Sheldon Museum Board votes to reverse the decision to change the museum's name. And Army contractors present data from contamination testing at the former Haynes Fuel Terminal and Tank Farm. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. At a meeting on Wednesday, the Sheldon Museum's Board of Trustees voted unanimously to reverse the name change. The name is again officially the Sheldon Museum and Cultural Center. The board voted to make the switch to the Haynes Museum back in October. The reasons for the name change were many, including confusion with the Sheldon Jackson Museum in Sitka. But community feedback prompted the board's decision to stick with Sheldon for now. Museum Director Helen Alton says the board will get more community input in January and go from there.
I don't think anybody really liked the name that they had voted on. I think the main vote was basically because they wanted to change. And they came up with one that everybody liked, but then they thought, well, we really need to get everybody's input because someone may have a really great idea.
Alton added that at the board meeting, Haynes resident Lucy Harrell made a hefty $10,000 donation. The next museum board meeting is scheduled for January 13th at 3:30 p.m. The Haynes-Fairbanks pipeline that was built by the Army in the 1950s polluted Alaska land through fuel spills and leaks. The Army is now working to assess the contamination so that it can be cleaned up for good. The former Haynes Fuel Terminal and Tank Farm on Lutac Road was the subject of intensive testing this year. Army contractors presented initial findings about the contamination at a Restoration Advisory Board meeting Friday. The contamination investigation at the fuel terminal was done by Northwind Inc. Arden Bailey led that work. He said, what's exciting about this is that it's aimed at a final solution.
Yeah, we found contamination out there, but this is the end of the investigation period for the tank farm. And we're going to move on to how to clean it up. And so, you know, Dave and Bob and Brian came to us and said, find every dead body. Find any place that there's contamination that you can. And we did.
They found a lot of potential contamination throughout the fuel terminal and tank farm area. Northwind knows some preliminary information about what kind of contamination it is, but most of their data right now has to do with location.
This is our part of the effort, and that's to find, document, and investigate every leak or every point of contaminated soil at the tank farm.
Bailey says his crew drilled nearly 1,000 holes in the soil to look for contamination. They used ultraviolet optical screening tools, or UVOS. The UVOS look for fluorescence in the soil. Clean soil isn't fluorescent. Soil contaminated with diesel is. Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation project manager Anne-Marie Palmieri said the UVOS method of testing is much more extensive and reliable than older technologies.
This technology and this technique would find the contamination more accurately than the traditional soil boring.
For each of those hundreds of holes tested with UVOS, Bailey has a chart that shows foot by foot how much fluorescence they found. One example taken near the main pump house had minimal fluorescence between 0 and 7 feet below ground, but once you got between 8 and 10 feet, the levels spike.
That's above regulatory levels. When I have that much fluorescence, it's above regulatory levels.
Once they find contamination, Northwind wants to determine whether the pollution got into the groundwater as well. They sampled 45 wells to see if contaminants were moving and where. Overall, Northwind found that the pump house is a known contamination source. There was contamination surrounding all the tank areas and berms.
If we look at where is the most contamination, it's probably some of these tank basins.
Bailey says the majority of the contamination appears to be between 2 and 12 feet deep. In October, DEC's Palmieri said one major question in the investigation is whether the contamination is petroleum or other more toxic materials like lead. Bailey says almost all the contamination they've found is petroleum, gasoline, and diesel-related materials. There is one exception, the drum storage area, which has some cleaning solvent contaminants. Northwind's remedial investigation isn't finished yet. Once they are done, another contractor will put together a risk assessment where they outline what the threats are to human health and the environment. Then the Army will come up with a plan to clean the contamination up and monitor the site long term. Next spring, Northwind plans to present definitive data on the contaminants they found. When will the tank farm and other pipeline contamination sites actually get cleaned up? The timeline is unclear and depends on a lot of factors. The Army and its contractors say they're trying to make the process as thorough as possible so that when they finish, they'll be finished for good. For a longer version of this story that includes information about contamination at pipeline sites along the Haines Highway, go to khns.org. About 50 people showed up to show support and share ideas at the Alaska Marine Highway System Community Engagement Meeting on Thursday. Haines was the last stop on a six-town tour for the Department of Transportation officials. The goal was to share facts and get community input on possible solutions to a dwindling schedule. KHNS's Jillian Rogers has the story.
It took four attempts for Captain Mike Neusel and his crewmate to get to Haines. Planes were grounded because of weather, so they eventually arrived on the ferry. And when they showed up at assembly chambers, they weren't greeted with a frustrated mob protesting proposed cuts. Instead, they were serenaded.
I love the ferry, the ferry.
After the crowd settled down, it was all business. Neusel got to work discussing budget shortcomings and recent tweaks to the system implemented as cost-cutting measures. He listened to comments and suggestions, none of which he hadn't heard before. First, the budget. Neusel says there's a request for $92 million in the FY17 state budget. That's a lowball option, because if they ask for what they really need, it simply wouldn't happen.
But that funds, in our case, option D, a pretty low level of service because, quite frankly, the state has a budget crisis on their hands.
In FY15, the ferries earned a record high $53.9 million in revenue, up 5% from the year before. But its costs were about $165 million. Funding from the state and federal governments makes up that gap. Also last year, the fleet carried more than 300,000 passengers and around 106,000 vehicles, making nearly 6,500 port calls. The final marine highway schedule for the summer isn't out yet. Neusel says it'll be posted in January. And while ferry officials asked for that $92 million, the budget has to get approved in the legislature.
What happened last year was we made that operation plan, we published a schedule based on that operation plan, and then that budget started getting chopped. Okay? And as that budget gets chopped, there's less and less funding available to actually run the schedule that we published.
The system is currently facing a $15.9 million shortage in its state operating fund compared to last year. As well, it's getting $4 million less in its state capital fund. As a result, the Taku is sitting on the sidelines in Ketchikan and has been out of service since June. And more ships in the fleet are slated to sit, not sail, next year.
We essentially have an 11-ship fleet, but we only have funding and the ability to run 9 of those ships, for the most part, for the year, or 10 of them, okay?
Cost-cutting and money-making measures like reducing services on ships, eliminating ferry positions, raising ticket prices, and reducing marketing have already happened. So the DOT is turning to ferry users themselves for ideas on how to make and save money. Bolstering efforts to attract more ferry-riding tourists, eliminating the Bellingham or Prince Rupert stops, and cutting the Juno run short at Berners Bay were a few of the ideas brought forward. Here's Haines resident Tresham Gregg.
What we should really be doing is enhancing our marketing system to make sure that we have many more customers wanting to come to Alaska. Put on two ferries going into Bellingham. Make them wonderful to travel on. Everybody's looking for a wonderful, safe place to travel to. We have it. We just need to market it.
Haines's Rob Goldberg suggested modifying the two Alaska-class ferries already under construction in Ketchikan so they have crew quarters. That would allow the vessels to have longer continuous runtimes and sail the Juneau-Haines-Skagway loop. Goldberg says the plan right now is for one boat to go Juneau-Haines and back to Juneau, and the other to make multiple daily trips back and forth between Haines and Skagway. Without crew quarters, they can't sail for more than 12 hours at a time.
I think they would be quite serviceable ships for running this loop, but they have to be able to work more than a 12-hour day.
Nusa listened to the concepts and comments and gave pros and cons for the ideas. There is no easy solution, he says, but that's why he came to Haines, to hear from those who use and need the ferry the most.
Happy with the ferry boat, Sarah Nair.
In Haines, I'm Jillian Rogers.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.